We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And today, we preview tomorrow's game against Golden State. We had an interesting pod yesterday after the Kings finished their season sweep of the Lakers, talking about the on-ball capacity of the stars. We focused more in on AD, didn't get into LeBron a whole lot. But Mike, we didn't get to hear your thoughts after the Sacramento game. It was a tough one. They had a couple days to prepare, and still it went the same way that it did. So before we move on, just give us your top line takeaways from that game, if you would.
It's funny how you set that up, because I was going to focus on LeBron. I have been thinking a lot about LeBron and the context of his season, and I think you have to start with how remarkable it is that he's still this productive at this age. But the question for the Lakers, who are, of course, in constant pursuit of actual titles, you know, is to what level can LeBron reach when the chips are down? And earlier this season, I mean, we saw that peak LeBron go in the in-season tournament, and especially in the semis and in the finals. And it was, you know, it was certainly good enough to beat those teams, just as it was good enough to beat the Grizzlies last year in the first round, to beat the Warriors in round two. I think throughout this regular season, there have been a lot of times where LeBron has been able to cue up his own individual level of performance and beat a lot of really good teams. And then there have been some other times, and I think Denver is the most specific matchup, but Sacramento, another one, where I just, there's been a part of me in thinking that, like, I've just seen it so many times in person, where I see the way LeBron walks into the arena. I know what the stakes are. I know that he's aware of what the standings are. And 90% of the time, the Lakers win those games. And LeBron is the one that is pushing it. Anthony Davis is right there with them a lot of times. You may have a role player step up, but ultimately it's LeBron. He is the leader. He is the guy that has the ball the most. He is the one that doesn't feel the initial defense that can usually get to the second line. And he just didn't have that in the Sacramento game. And the same thing happened the previous game. So there are, I think, some reasons why with that matchup we've talked about with Anthony Davis, and you guys spent a lot of time on yesterday, so I don't need to reiterate too much, although I find myself almost always on the Anthony Davis side of the argument relative to almost anything, which I don't know if that says something about me or if it says something about the narrative. But with LeBron, that to me is kind of the main thing, as somebody that he talks about the main thing being the main thing, that I think is a just something to watch as the Lakers now go towards what's looking much more like the 9-10 game, as opposed to potentially the 7-8 game, which would have been more likely had they beaten the Kings even one of the two times. And, you know, LeBron, so this is just I was just looking at the last like 10 years of LeBron net rating, and this again does not define everything at all. But this year, he's plus 2.2. Last year was plus 4.6. 21-22 season, when they brought Russ in, was minus 2.5. The 2 years before that, where the roster was more, was, you know, looked pretty good around it, it was plus 8.5 in 19-20 season, and then plus 9.2 in the 2021 season. And these things are interesting because it's always teammate dependent. Darius, we had a discussion on the text thread yesterday about sort of roster optimization, coaching optimization, how that impacts specific players. And, you know, one of my beliefs through all this, though, is that like LeBron, almost regardless of what's around him throughout his career, has been able to do enough in to really drive winning to a high degree. And I still think that he's way above most players in the NBA. But in terms of the top couple, you know, can he, when he calls upon his A game, still get to the level that the Lakers need to get to not just, you know, put themselves in a position for a playoff run, but to win those playoff series? And that's, to me, the question as to how, as to what level is he at right now and how that is, how that affects the rest of the team. So, that's a lot of different LeBron thoughts, and you guys go where you are with it. But that's kind of where I've been thinking of the last couple of days and, you know, what that's going to mean heading into this stretch run here.
Pete, I'd love to hear your thoughts about LeBron. I had been pretty vocal in our text thread during the Kings game that, like, in the moment, I thought LeBron was playing one of his worst games of the season. To that point, I was particularly struck by his lack of engagement defensively, rather than like his general struggles offensively. Like
AD was particularly struck by his lack of engagement defensively on a couple of plays too.
Yeah. Let me throw in one thing I should have mentioned. I think LeBron was sick in that Kings game. Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't be surprised. And so we're coming off of that and just watching, being in the arena, his body language, the way that he was moving, and he had mentioned being sick the previous game after we had talked to him against Minnesota on Sunday. So I do think that may have been part of it. And I wouldn't be shocked if against the Warriors, he's feeling better. And it's like, oh, back to LeBron being the best player on the court again. But there have been enough times this year for me to not qualify that too much. And clearly in year 21, the play has slipped some, especially defensively.
I just want to echo your sentiment too, Mike, about how every other player in year 21 of their career, the standard was be in the league. And that is quite a remarkable accomplishment. Whereas
every
we're talking
other player is five guys, by the
yes,
way, like
exactly.
five all-timers. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I don't want to approach this conversation with a lack of gratitude or perspective for what we're hoping for and asking for LeBron to do. That we're talking about the difference between being in the league at year 21 and being a top two. And to throw an additional component into this after we talked yesterday, D, one of the things I was thinking about with Anthony Davis is that he's been a better on-ball player than he is, certainly. But the reason he is a max guy and one of the better guys in the league is because he is a great defensive player who's also very good on offense. There's not a lot of guys who are great defensive players who can also be a 25-point-per-game type of guy. But even at his best, he wasn't a number one on a championship team, throw-the-ball-to-him type of guy. That was the role that LeBron filled. And so that's, in some ways, still the one he has to fill. And that, talk about a gargantuan ask in year 21.
Yeah, the thing I was going to say about LeBron is that, just contextualizing his production, he is producing now at the level in which fans should have realistically expected him to produce when he first signed with the Lakers like six seasons ago. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he is still this productive at this age isn't just a marvel or unprecedented or anything. It's like, I truly believe there will never be another player who is exactly like this. Like, you may find a guy who is scoring 20 plus points a game in his 18th, 19th, 20th season, even maybe his 21st season. I do not think that player will still have the sort of level that he can reach. Mm-hmm. And so when Mike was talking, it's like, yeah, LeBron's no longer a top five player. Like the player that Mike is describing is a top five player in the league. The guy who on a night in night basis or on any night decides I'm winning and there's nothing you can do about this. There's like four guys like that in the entire league. If that, now, when you consider like how talented the league is, that is like totally independent of matchup. And LeBron is no longer that player. And the point I was making in our text thread is more about the idea of LeBron and AD need more support than ever.
Yeah.
That does not mean that because they need more support than ever, that they are incapable of winning at the highest level. It just makes the needle that they have to thread that more narrow, and which diminishes their chances as an overall title contender. And I'm of the belief that this Lakers team to compete and win a championship needs to be both fully healthy and optimized from a coaching standpoint. And if we're being critically honest, the team has not been optimized from a coaching standpoint, and they have been woefully unhealthy in the role player perspective, in the players that support LeBron and AD in the exact ways they need to be supported at this stage of their careers. And it's a tricky equation then to look at individual production and say, well, LeBron and AD have been so healthy and the Lakers are not good. So what does that say about LeBron and AD? It says exactly what I just said 2 seconds ago, which is they need more support. And so if they're not 25-year-old, 24-year-old superstar players who are like, oh, the Lukas or the Giannises, or like even Giannis, I think, now needs more support than what he did a couple of seasons ago when he won the championship. But it's like, this is the way that the league is now. And so I'm happy that we started our discussion with LeBron, because let's go to break here, because in previewing the Warriors game, LeBron's super important against the Warriors, and I really want to zero in and get into the middle of that Venn diagram a bit.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So, Mike, we've been in the arena for the two Lakers-Warriors games that have taken place to this season. LeBron still got some juice for the Warriors specifically. And the first game was that double OT classic that we went to, where LeBron was unreal as a shot maker in that game. I just wanted to sort of volley this back to both of you as just to sort of talk about the matchup against the Warriors, but LeBron's specific importance against the Warriors as like a big wing ball handler and shot creator against a Warriors team that has size to contend with him, but often has tried to deploy that size onto the Lakers guards defensively in order to try to disrupt them.
Yeah, it's funny. I do want to jump specifically into the matchup and I want to make one other comment about LeBron, though, and maybe this it would be to set up a future pod. It's just the it kind of like, Pete, when we're talking about Anthony Davis, right, and we're like, you, I won't put your text thoughts or your thread thoughts out on into the public like Darius sometimes does to me. But AD, this is what I was saying. Like, I'm always defending him to some degree. Like, he's sixth in win shares this year, even despite some of his offensive games and like what happened against the Kings. And like this year, LeBron is 28, and it's, but LeBron still so often looks like LeBron out there on the floor. And that's the stuff that is usually going to get, certainly from a national perspective, some of the attention. And he deserves nothing but praise for still being able to play at this level for this long. But then in the context of what Darius was saying in the roster build and the coaching and the, what are LeBron and AD now? What are they going to be this playoff run? Yes. What can they be next year? How do the Lakers account for that? And that's all. And I just think it's a very difficult conversation to have about the legend of LeBron James and then still trying to figure out how to optimally win a game like against the Warriors on Saturday. And is it LeBron that's going to be leading that way? Anthony Davis was the best player in that series last year. But when LeBron's on the court, it's just complicated to me. Yes. So that's something to leave out there that we can get into moving forward. And I'm just endlessly interested in that dynamic.
That's really what the heart of this conversation is for me, Mike. It's not like a, why can't you assholes do this and lead us to a championship? It's not that. It's just an evaluation of like, where are they at, sure, at this point? And the thing that the element of the game that my focus is squarely set on with respect to them is on ball shot creation. LeBron is either first or second in the league in transition scoring. He's shooting 40% from three. He is cutting off of the ball. All of the opportunistic off-ball type of stuff that you can score on, that you can anticipate ahead of the other guy next to you, LeBron excels at that, right? He's scoring as well as he ever has. And that's why it can seem silly we're having this conversation when you look at their points per game total, and they're still right around 25 on a team that's got a couple of other scorers on it too. And so, but a lot of those buckets are coming off of other people's shot creation. Now, there is a certain chicken or the egg type of element to that for sure, but I'm seeing more and more them having difficulty beating the guy across from them and in a one-on-one with the ball in their hands type of matchup. And that's something that I even think is okay as when it's a second option. But I do think you need one guy, especially if you've got two max guys, to be able to consistently beat the guy across from you. I think it's a big reason why the Denver games always go the way that they do. Those are games where we're locked in, we're trying everything we can, and they're close by the end. But the quality of shots that Jokic and Murray can create are just a different level than LeBron and AD can, at least in those games. And so if that's the case, like, who is the guy that in the high level games, right? It's going to be certain games. The Minnesota game, for example, AD had a huge advantage with Gobert and Cat out, and he's going to thrash around on the interior, and there's nothing Naz Reid and Luka Garza are going to be able to do about that. But in the highest level matchups, in the games that you're going to have to win if you want to compete for a championship, you do need your best players to be able to compromise the defense in ways that are really hard. There are only a few guys in the league that can really do that on a consistent, dependable type of basis. And I don't think that guys on the level of D'Lo and Austin are quite good enough to do that either. And so in some ways, D, I see our roster increasingly as a couple of second options and a couple of third options, of which you can win some regular season games like that. But I have a concern is, can your best guys beat the guy across from them? And this Golden State game tonight is an example of one that's of LeBron being on the ball, like you were talking about. I'm curious how he does in that respect.
It's tricky to me. Denver, to me, is the lone team that has real answers in this regard. I think that in a playoff series against the Kings, for example, like, I honestly think LeBron goes into the post a bunch more against Harrison Barnes and against, like, their more, like, wing side.
That's what players. I thought was going to happen the other day, Darius.
It did not happen, Mike. And look, it's a tricky thing. And so we talked. And so I'm throwing whatever Warrior stuff that I wanted to get to out of the window for a minute, because who cares? The Lakers have played the Warriors a bunch of times. It's just like, I've been there and done that. The thing that's super interesting to me, and this is more like a philosophical discussion as much as it is about LeBron and AD, but so much about basketball to me is advantage creation. And so what Pete is talking about is, or to me, the way I'm interpreting what Pete is talking about is, you need the other guy to beat, like, you need your guy to be able to beat the other guy and create good shots for himself or for his teammates. And it's just like, you look at the best scorers around the league, and they're the guys who are doing that. Like, Shea gets 30 a night, just basically being like, yep, you got nothing for me. Luka gets 30 a night basically by saying, yep, you got nothing for me. And there is advantage creation for their own shot creation that is like, oh, yep, sorry, opponent, you can do whatever you want, but I'm still going to score. And when you devote too many resources to me, then that's when the whole floor is going to open up. And it's not a coincidence that OKC guys shoot, everyone in their rotation yes. shoots 40% from three. Part of that is because they're good shooters and they have good coaching and player development and on and on and on. Another part of it is they put teams in rotation and guys are constantly helping on like
yeah.
their best player's ability to create an advantage. The interesting thing for the Lakers to me is that for all of the decline in on-ball skill that Pete is talking about, which is real, defenses still treat LeBron and AD with a certain amount of like, oh no, mm-hmm. we have to deal with you, particularly when they establish position close to the paint.
Yes.
And this is why they are more of a post-up duo than they are a we're going to create from the top of the floor mm-hmm. and go get you duo. And the sort of dissonance is too strong of a word, but the Lakers being this primary five out offense that is so dependent on like being perimeter based attacking and veering away from the post up element of five out offense is something that I hope that bridge gets closer together during the playoffs, particularly because I think that's where the Lakers advantage goes back in the direction of, oh, as on-ball players doing this specific thing, the league still looks at you as ultra dangerous players. And with the improvement in passing from Anthony Davis from the post and LeBron's unreal passing in general, they are still able to help create and generate good offensive looks. The Lakers are like top five in offense for 2.5 months. And it's not a coincidence that a lot of that is based off of ball movement and shot creation from multiple spots on the floor. But when looking at LeBron and AD and trying to optimize them, I'm like, oh no, you got to get these guys to the post more than what you've doing and with some intentionality.
That's the place where they draw a second defender most often, Mike.
Can I just, I want to turn this to you. In watching that Kings game, LeBron and AD both missed bunnies in the first quarter and just, you know, couldn't really get going. And LeBron's, again, I think, whatever, he was sick, whatever it was, he wasn't quite there yet, even offensively. Austin and Rui, though, were. And part of that goes to LeBron and AD getting a lot of the credit. And yet, so Austin and Rui really get going. They carry the scoring load. But then in the second half, and this happens on every NBA team, it's like, all right, like, we got to get LeBron and AD going. You know, these guys need more shots. Darius and I, and you to an extent, Peter, always pushing the Anthony Davis, give him the ball more, give him the ball every time. And I think that's where this dynamic comes into play as well, where you do have some guys in Austin and Rui and D'Lo who like are not far from number one guys, but really effective offensive players when the attention especially is being paid to LeBron and AD to an extent. But then that requires a certain level of defense and role player stuff from LeBron and AD that it like the balance sometimes is off. And I guess my point would be that's where you need your stars to be stars, because even if the role players want to keep having a game like that, they're not going to just keep getting the ball the whole game. And you know what I mean? It's just Absolutely. A tough, like it's tough on the role players and the stars in that setting, but it's that balance is a difficult one to strike.
Yeah, I think the collective role player production is, you hope for a certain amount of production between D'Lo, Austin, and Rui in particular, while not knowing exactly who that's going to come from on a particular night or even in a particular half. That's the nature of them being role players. Some nights it's going to be Rui's night. Other nights it's going to be D'Lo with 44. And then the next night he has six, you know, and some nights it's going to be Austin. Some nights it won't be. And so, but collectively, I do think that trio has held up their end of the bargain on the offensive end at the very least. And there is a certain degree of the other teams in the locker room at halftime and saying, Austin Reeves has 19 points. Rui has 17. We can't let them have the same type of shots that they had in the half before. And I think that part of that was and D'Lo deflected a question about this, like, why didn't you get Rui the ball? He's like, I'm not going there. Part of it is our fault, right? Not being intentional enough about getting a guy like Rui. We talk about getting AD the ball in the post. Rui's actually been probably our most prolific post-up guy in just because he has the most obvious mismatch a lot of the times, which is because LeBron and AD are on the floor, of course. But they can, the other team can always adjust to a Rui, to an Austin. The type of guy that we're talking about in this pod, D, is a guy that your adjustment to him is you have to send more attention to him. And then that creates the result of getting other guys open. And that happened in the second half, and neither of the stars really took advantage of that until the fourth quarter, when it was not garbage time, but kind of adjacent to that.
Yeah, the game was, if not fully out of the exit door, it put its hat on, it got this coat from Coach Chet,
that's right,
and it was getting its valet card ready to go get my car. I was looking at this before the pod. Me and Mike talk about the standings page, and it's funny looking at the standings page because in the top, like, 10 or 12 teams, 11 teams, like in the Western Conference, there's all this green in the point differential column, which basically shows like who's actually ahead in point differential for the season. And the one team that's in red is the Lakers. Mm. And so the Lakers are a minus 32, I think, in terms of point differential. So they've been outscored by 32 points total this season, and they're still in the ninth seed, which is interesting. So in a way, they're outperforming their differential more than the other teams who are in this same range, right? But the Lakers are 0-7 against the Nuggets and the Kings. And we had talked about this the other day, and I wrote some of this down in Silver Screen and Roll, but the Nuggets and the Kings are beating the Lakers in almost the exact same ways, with different personnel and different players, but almost in the exact way, right? Which is like a physical center who is like good on both sides of the ball against AD, and guards who are basically torching the Lakers guards and putting the rest of the defense in compromised positions way too often. And then their role players are making shots because the rest of the defense is compromised. And it's a simple formula that not nearly enough teams can get to against this specific Lakers team, but those two teams can. And in the idea of like who you can and cannot beat, I had said this to you the other day, Pete, but it's just like, if you look at all of the rest of the teams in the entire Western Conference, like the Lakers would not be favored against all of them, but I like their chances against every other single Western Conference team, except for Denver for sure, and seemingly Sacramento, who the Lakers cannot beat for anything. And so I kick this idea back to you with our concerns about LeBron and AD is they still have ingredients that are overwhelming in a lot of ways to a lot of different opponents. And how do you balance that in terms of what they're still able to do against a lot of opponents, but not every opponent? Because when you look at the very best in the league, you're like, well, you can do this against anyone. And obviously, no player is Superman. Every player has their kryptonite, right? There is this idea of just like, oh, well, Vando gives player X, Y, and Z problems. Like, so we've seen it. We've seen the Lakers do this to other team stars as well, where it's just like, oh, well, they bring them down a notch. But I'm super interested just in terms of optimization and all of this talk that we're having. I feel like we're looking at what the Lakers stars are struggling at and what they're not doing as well. And I think that that's a valid point. How much do you think that what they still can do can still be overwhelming to many of the teams in the league, and to what degree and how much that matters to you within the context of this entire conversation?
I'll just note that my belief, and this goes right up to the whole Laker Kings thing, my belief was that LeBron and AD, when locked in, could absolutely overwhelm Sacramento just defensively. Like, forget about giving up a ton of threes or letting Fox and not handling screen roll the right way. And like, they couldn't do it in this. And so that's made me start to question, I think, because of the circumstances. I've dismissed the games earlier in the season to some extent. Like, the Lakers weren't locked in on those games, and they weren't in season tournament games. The one game did go to double OT. Sacramento has been absolutely pushing hard against the Lakers every time. Mike Brown was the guy that hired Darvin Ham, and I think kind of like knows Darvin, and there are certain things there where I think Mike has done a really good job. And in fact, that was mentioned post-game by D'Angelo Russell. So there are there are things there, but I just thought in these two games, Pete, I really did. And you, I said it here, right? I thought that LeBron and AD were going to be able to overwhelm. And so the fact that they couldn't, does that mean that they can't against Golden State tomorrow or they can't? No, but it says something. And sure, it says something just that the Lakers remain in this 9-10 game. And so I have kind of had to, I've had a pretty consistent opinion about the team throughout the season. Like, up, they can get up for the big games and they can beat basically everybody but Denver. And I think I have to come off that a little bit. I just do after this last week and these two games. And I think that that's the road that the Lakers have to fight through now, barring a couple of teams collapsing and having, like, Phoenix and Dallas would have to go under 500 and the Lakers would have to go like 11-4 if they're going to climb up into that 7-8 game. And that's going to be tough. I was looking at it the other day, but it was something like that. Like, in order to make up that ground, the Lakers don't have the tiebreaker with Dallas. So that's kind of the way I would indirectly answer the question, Pete. It's just that I have, this last week has made me lower what I think some of the ceiling is for this team.
And I think that's totally fair. And so it becomes a question of, okay, what is your advantage? And I think that when you were talking about the post earlier, D, this is why I've been on the idea of like LeBron and AD in the post for a couple of years. I do want to point out that is, I think the best version of this team on offense is somewhat unconventional relative to what works in the rest of the NBA. Like, the idea of us being this hyper post-up team is something that nobody else does, especially amongst, it's like, okay, you got Embiid, you got Jokic. Yeah, sure, we're going to post up a little bit, but we actually have three guys in all of our front court players who can do it. And I think that is the place where you draw to, and that's when you're in business. And so to me, that it is an increase in those types of touches. But tonight, for example, but on Saturday against Golden State, what we've seen the last time against them is they'll put like Clay on LeBron and put Kuminga or Wiggins on D'Lo and Austin. And to me, that's like, there's a scene in that movie, you know, that movie Kill Bill, and they're in a tea shop or a restaurant in Japan, and the owner and the guy who's at the main counter have been working together for years, and they're bickering with each other, and the guy at the main counter is like, I've worked here for 30 years, I'd be general if this was the army, and the other guy's like, well, I'd be the emperor because I've been here for 40. That's basically the crux of the conversation. LeBron should be able to bust Klay Thompson's ass like when they're in their 50s, right? Like, I don't care what year it is or year 21. Klay's getting older too. And so that is exactly the type of matchup, D, where whether it's in the post or off of the dribble, where if they've got Klay Thompson on him, I'd expect LeBron to be able to score on him, whether it's in the post or on the perimeter. So that's a matchup I'd be zeroed in on.
Yeah, and he has, except in the double OT game, he did it with outside shot making. Mm-hmm. Rather than through the post. The last couple of seasons, and not as much this season, but last season, I remember being a big topic of conversation between us, is how many drives does LeBron have in him? He did it like time after time after time in critical playoff moments. Like the two drives he had to beat Memphis, the one to force OT, where he like got it way high up the glass on a strong right-hand drive where he flipped it in over Jaren Jackson over a strong contest to force overtime. And then the strong left-handed drive against Dylan Brooks to close the game where he drew the and one. That's just like, okay, well, knock two drives off of the list of like however many left he has in his chamber, right? This season, I have wondered how many like post-ups he has left in him at times, and how many times he wants to like back down a dude and then live down there, like, and how much that takes off of his legs. I feel like guys are leaning on him a bunch. He's not getting as many calls on those sorts of plays as he is on like straight line drives when he's getting to the basket. And so in terms of the volume of post-ups, like, to me, that could be a reason why LeBron's not posting as much as maybe we would like to see him post up. I also just think the shape of the Lakers offense is that it is very perimeter oriented. They're running a five out offense. Like the guards the Lakers start are particularly adept at living out there. They are three-level scorers who love to shoot the three-point shot when you go under screens and love to attack out of pick and roll. They can get all of the way to the basket with the right amount of wiggle, but they are excellent mid-range players. And the way to, if you're going to start those specific players, then you want to try to get the most out of them. Right. And LeBron and AD are still versatile enough to be like, hey, go set some screens and we'll post you up some. And I just think in the most critical games, the dial does need to be turned back, especially in those games, towards like, this is how we optimize LeBron and AD. And as D'Lo and Austin, you two are versatile enough to be like, oh, well, guess what? You're going to be catch and shoot players off swing, and you're going to attack closeouts when you get run at, or you're going to get second side action off of swing, because then that'll flow into a DHO or a pick and roll. There's more of that that can be done too. And the Lakers, I think, would still be a pretty productive offense while still compromising the defense more in ways that lean into where LeBron and AD are going to hurt defenses most, or at least draw the type of defensive attention that we've talked about as like primary on-ball players should.
Yeah, that idea intertwined with what Pete was talking about with sort of the one-on-one shot creation of LeBron and AD. So if you look up the standings, 8 teams ahead of the Lakers, most of those guys have a guy, you know, who is in his prime and optimal at getting those shots, whether it's Luka for Dallas or Booker and Durant for Phoenix and like on and up, and Fox for Sacramento, and like on and up the list. And so if LeBron's level of doing that has dropped just a little bit, and it has dropped a little bit, and AD has never been that kind of guy, even though he can certainly do it in certain contexts. And then to me, where the Lakers have kind of, and this is part of why they're in the 9th spot, they don't have that defensive hammer to the same extent that they have in the past. So they're getting in more of these offensive games of late without just being able to completely lock down on defense, because they've had to lift some of, with LeBron and AD being out there, it means more D'Lo, more Austin. Spencer Dinwiddie continuing to get minutes despite not actually using usage. Part of this is because of Wood and Vanderbilt being out. And like, had those guys, had you at least been able to have one of those guys on the court to make up and maybe make the defense stronger, like that to me is where the Lakers ripping off a run down the stretch is going to be that much more difficult, because the defensive hammer just hasn't been there for a while. And on certain nights, D'Lo hits 9 threes. Great. That's good enough to beat Milwaukee, you know. Or some AD completely batters a shorthanded Minnesota Timberwolves team inside. But the Lakers didn't win those games with, you know, with like a certain aplomb or a certain, this is what we do on defense, this is what we do on offense. And not being able to really have that identity either way, to me is tricky. And I don't mean to be doom and gloom, Pete. I'm just trying to understand all of the context here, and where the Lakers are coming up short, even though they're, you know, 5 games over 500 isn't bad. Mm-hmm. It's just right now with how good the West is, it's 9th.
No, it's spot on. And it's something that if you don't have that level of dependable shot creation, that level of defense becomes essential. We just don't have the personnel for it. We'll talk more as the season goes on and in the postseason, kind of a roster and review type of thing. But if you look at the role players on this team, there aren't many guys who are better on defense than they are on offense. And a lot of the, something I've been thinking about lately is several of the guys that we signed on vet minimum deals. This is specifically Cam, Jackson Hayes, and Christian Wood stand out in this respect. They're free agents to me that were more along the lines of previous offseasons, meaning that when we had the 3-star build, one of the necessities when you've got 3 guys making that much money is that you hit on some minimum players on a MLE type of guy. And so Malik Monk is probably the best example of this, of like, yeah, this guy's on a Bettman deal, but he's really good. And Malik Monk's talent was never something that was ever in question. And the same can be said of Cam, Jackson, Christian Wood, those types of guys. But in the recruitment of those type of guys, there aren't a lot of like dirty work, just do your job type of guys. I used to call this type the responsible adults a couple of years ago, right? The guys that are just going to fight over the top of screens. They're going to make their rotations, knock down their threes at a so-so clip when they're open. Wes Matthews, for some reason, rings in my head as kind of a patron saint of this type of guy. And the absence of those type of guys in the role players in pursuit of a guy that, hey, he's really going to hit because he's talented. Maybe he wasn't in a good situation. And I don't think we should not be pursuing those guys, but that's pretty much the majority of the players that we got in this offseason, right? Were guys that have talent, especially as scorers, at some point have some degree of pedigree. Obviously, Cam is a better defensive player than he is on offense, but he came up in that on-ball type of guy, and he still doesn't know how to operate entirely within organized offense, right? And so I think that's one of the things we haven't talked about that much, is we just don't have a lot of like gritty role player type of guys in exchange for, I think, guys that we were hoping would pop off. But I think this roster needed just dependability more than it needed those type of guys. So curious your thoughts on that, D.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I also think that the Jared Vanderbilt injury is a critical injury. It's just a critical injury,
Vincent,
too.
And Vincent for this one.
And Vincent, well, it's just like, I forgot Vincent was even on the team until right this second when we just brought him up again. Like, in terms of this pod. And I hadn't thought of him once because he's literally played a half a dozen games.
I hadn't thought of him until Pete said, you know, kind of the whole responsible adult thing and the, you know, like dependable for some defense, you know, like that kind of thing, like role player. And they spent, you know, they spent money to get him too. So that's tough.
It
hurts. Most teams have at least one guy out of that caliber.
The absence of all of these guys, like Cam's missed a bunch of time this season. And like, look, in my ideal world, Cam probably doesn't even play. His effectiveness in November, I think, masked the idea that he should have a bigger role than what he actually should. And in an ideal version of the Lakers, Cam is your 11th or 12th player. Mm-hmm. The best version of this team is still a team that plays bigger. So many games after the All-Star break, Vando and Wood haven't played at all.
Yeah.
In this entire stretch after the All-Star break, and you need both of those players in order to play a bigger front court, in order to support LeBron and AD in the ways that they need supported. No shit, the Lakers don't have enough defense on the floor because Anthony Davis is out there alone on most nights. Alone is too strong of a word, but if your next two forwards are Rui and LeBron, year 21 LeBron, guess how much play-to-play defense you're getting from those guys in terms of front court support. And then those guys are being supported on the perimeter by Austin Reeves and D'Angelo Russell, right? And then after that, they're going to Torian Prince. And so, like, and then the Lakers coaches refuse to play Jackson Hayes with Anthony Davis. And so there's not a too big look that exists right now where you could have AD in help situations rather than him be always having to try to do two things at once. And it's just a tricky equation right now. And so I'd love to see one of those front court players get back, and ideally both. And then for the team to basically be like, yeah, guess what? Out of the 10 players that we play, six of them are actual forwards and centers.
All right, we got to wrap up here. We will be back on Monday to discuss how the Warriors game went. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn his double team. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
Yes, Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds, Shaq with his 8th block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal! Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two. One.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant. Yes.
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic
Trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
The headlines remind us daily, the world is a dangerous place. The elites in charge say everything's fine, stop noticing. But you know better. And your gut knows that time is short to prepare for a world that is four missed meals away from chaos. My Patriot Supply has helped over 3 million families become more self-reliant and is the company Americans trust to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling three-month emergency food kits. Each contain delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Secure at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save $200, plus get free shipping on all their Ready Hour three-month emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. My Patriot Supply also has solar power generators, water filtration units, biomass stoves, heirloom seeds, and critical survival gear. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.